who's getting it started?
Adon, of course.
Oh, yeah. Sexy voice gets it bobbing.
I don't even know why you say I sound like that.
That hurts so hard to do that.
You use sexy to describe Adon. What would you use to describe my voice?
Raspy. Yeah, NASCAR.
Yo, you probably don't recognize any of these voices, none of them, because we've not been here in a really long time. But my name is Adon Bean. To my left is Dan Duncan.
Yo.
To my right is Sho Baraka.
I'm in his marker.
And right now, this is off the record. That's crazy, right? This is off the record.
Oh, my Lord, we're
man,
back.
Man, man.
We've been off the books.
We've been off the books. Yeah, man. But we're here. We're here for y'all. We're here for each and every one of y'all. We're here because, yeah, summer's over. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we are done.
That's our excuse.
That's right. Summer's over. And
we had a fourth meeting one day. We sat around. What excuse should we really run with? That's all. That's the best we came up with.
We came together with that. Honestly, David was too much of a punk to even show up today. Like, ooh, he couldn't even handle it.
Yeah, what? Oh, he's on the road. Is he on
the
road?
No, he's famous right now, y'all. Yeah, he's super famous.
Gallivant in the world.
He's about to get this Kevin Hart joint, I think.
Yeah, shout out to David, man. Yeah.
October 2nd, right?
October 2nd. I think that is right.
Comedy 11:30 Central. Comedy Central. I want to say.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely check it out.
You better be funny too.
Absolutely.
Because I'm not going to get fake laughs.
Absolutely.
No courtesy laughs. No courtesy laughs, bro.
No, you got to earn each and every one of these.
Each laugh. And I'm going to text them every time there's something that's terrible. Like, that was bad.
I'm going to just text them, nah, B.
Nah, B.
Try again, fam.
Come harder, homie. Come harder.
But no, shout out to...
I'm going to live tweet that, bro.
We should so live tweet that set.
Oh, no, we should. Hey, right now, so as you know, October 2nd, 4th District will be live tweeting David Perdue's set on Comedy Central. Everything he says, we're giving it a grade.
Thumbs up or thumb down, it's like Gladiator. Off with his head.
Best thing ever.
He gone.
But yeah, shout out to him on the road. I think if you definitely hit him up on IG or Twitter, you can see where he is at. He's traveling this whole
week.
He's
with Rob Hayes, I think, opening up for Rob. Rob's doing his tour. So
nice.
Hit up Rob Hayes. You can find him that way.
That's what's up. But yeah, we figured we'd get together and just talk about the latest greatest like we always do about this time. And, you know, but really quick, everybody good? Everybody been traveling, I think. Everybody been doing some projects. Dan, how are you?
Yeah, man, I've been good. I've lost my voice because it's college football season. Go Dogs. I have a lot of pent-up ridiculousness I need to get out. So I'm happy about that. Be back here. Was out in L.A., and I question why Sho ever came to Atlanta, to be honest.
Oh, bro, when you grew up there, you think of ways to get out.
Yeah, it was amazing.
But I didn't live in the parts you were. You were in the, like, you're on the beach, you're in Santa Monica, you're probably on the pier. Like, I didn't grow up there. So it was like, I was in the inland, my man. So it's like, I'm looking at like fall smog and like mountain and cholos, because like, that's what I'm looking at.
So yeah, it was good. 70 degrees, coming back to 88 in Atlanta. I wasn't that pleased, but it's good to be back. It's good to be here. It's good to be with the guys. I'm ready to do this.
That's what's up. And Sho, you've been working on, what have you been developing? What has it been?
Ooh. A little bit of everything.
Yeah.
But
Christianity Today, big article came out.
Yeah.
It did. That 4th District passed on. So
you passed on a lot of things that shouldn't get published.
So look, just for y'all people who submit stuff to 4th District, you know, just know that mines get... I get the rejection too. They give me the Dikembe Mutombo.
No.
So, hey.
But no, congrats, man. That's
thank
what's
you.
Up. That's
what's up. Yeah, man.
We was talking about how you a man without a party, right?
I was, yeah. I'm actually going to be on NPR tomorrow morning.
What?
My man's rocking the public radio.
I am doing
nerd,
that.
So, yeah. I'm actually going to be on it. I don't know when they're going to air it. It's recording tomorrow, but.
That's what's up.
Yeah, so that's pretty
dope. Cool.
I'm going to have to admit to him that I'm a faithful listener, but I don't support.
Ooh. So I only got this because I support. So
I make it stab.
Between the both of us, we're just
one. I may just wear your shirt. But no, I've been working on an album, man.
Yeah, man.
I'm glad to say that it's going to be coming out really soon.
Nice.
I should give something exclusive to these listeners. What can I?
I don't know. They should at least. I mean, we should think about that. You should think about that. Uh-huh. I definitely want people to tweet us what they would like.
All yeah, right, let's do that. You do know that. What I'm saying? There's certain things that I can't do.
I know.
Sure.
So I can't just yet give the date, the release date.
Okay.
I can't give the album title.
Okay.
But I can probably do some other stuff.
Okay. Mm-hmm. We'll figure something
out. So y'all
out.
Get creative and we'll let figure me know something out.
Hit us up. Yeah. Hashtag
exclusively off on off to the next off the record.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. We'll figure something out.
We'll figure it out.
But you liking how it sounds though.
Man, bro, I don't know how to. I'm feeling myself right now. That's all I'm saying.
We're gonna definitely talk about this more in depth. We're gonna schedule something. You know, yeah. I think definitely I'd love to sit down with you and talk about it. But aside from that though, you're like in terms of the scope of the work you've done past. You're liking
I feel like there's a moment, and I definitely feel like there's things I could have done better and can get better, but I do feel like there's a moment when you as an artist, you feel like you're somewhere at your peak as in writing mm-hmm. and communicating what you really I'd understand
agree. Yeah,
and then there's people who come alongside you and give you the music that match that and I feel like I'm there. I feel like I'm, if not there, I'm very close to there.
Okay.
And I think part of the process is because I've been forced to take a long time to make the album.
Yeah.
It started in 2014. Mm-hmm. Was it 2014, like late 2014. And James Portier and I pretty much finished, we did finish a album.
An album, yeah.
And with the different transactions that happened because of then lend to Humble Beast, mm-hmm. I had to take a couple songs off the album mm-hmm. and then add more songs. So,
yeah. So that's what happened with the Louis Portier.
Yeah, piece. That's what happened with the Louis Portier.
Because I know a lot of people have been asking about that.
So that's one exclusive thing.
Yeah.
So it's still, so the album, so a lot of the stuff that people saw us working on, whether it be in like videos and mm-hmm. The documentary we did, those songs are still making it on the album. Pretty much all those songs are still making it on the album. Mm-hmm. But the project is no longer a Louis Portier album, but those songs are still on the album. That's and so up. My man James Portier is just a producer and featured artist on the songs.
That's what's up. That's cool. What's up. I'll tell you what's crazy though. Like whenever this record does drop, pay your taxes, bro. I'm gonna tell you that right now, because
what happens when you don't pay your taxes?
There is somebody out of St. Louis.
Yeah.
Who would tell you to pay your taxes dirty.
Pay your taxes dirty.
Pay your taxes dirty.
Going down, down, baby. Oh,
shit. Dan Dungan, please tell us what's going on with Nelly.
Where does Nelly fall on your top five? Band-Aids. I feel like he's in your top five. So where does he fall in your top five?
I can't, like, you know, okay, so I'll say this. The middle school boy in me, mm-hmm. who just wanted to dance up on every single female, puts him number one on every list because every one of his songs was like the jam when I was in middle school.
I ain't gonna front, I hated Nelly publicly, mm-hmm. but like he was that artist. She was like, yo, when his songs come on, you like
St. Louis.
Yeah, you gotta dance. You gotta move.
I will say this much. So I loathe Ride With Me. Okay. I just hated that.
Pop jam.
But I'll be honest, like I remember I went my girlfriend at the time was Nigerian. Not that she's not Nigerian now. She's not my girlfriend right now. Like she's still Nigerian.
She's decided she wants to be gotten
married
now.
You know what? I'm done with that.
I'm across this border real quick.
Somalian. Let me just get that popping. But so I was dating a girl who was Nigerian. And there's like this underground Nigerian community in Atlanta that's like huge.
I need to find that community,
yo,
bro.
Yo.
Because I want to be Nigerian. So like deep down in there, I want to be Nigerian.
English Nigerian.
It's crazy. It's not a game.
Yeah.
And even like you see this pop up sometimes when like someone like K-Nan will perform.
Yeah.
And then like the whole like Somali people, just tons of people will show up and you're like, where all these people come from. I did not know y'all existed.
I was about to say something real racist.
Yeah, so let's just move on. we don't know what sponsors we got yet, so let's just.
Yes, we're trying real hard. If you want a sponsor off the record, we are currently taking sponsors. Even if you're Somalian or Kenyan or anything.
So, yeah. But no,
we take some quaches, we take it all. We take it all.
But yeah. I wanted to say this, though, that like Nelly, this was the first time I remember like when Hot in Here came on in this like club environment. Well, it was the first time I heard a song and I was like, that is a hit. Like, yes. You know what I mean? Like, just like the slick back radio A&R in me was like, oh yeah, this is going somewhere.
This is,
it doesn't even matter if I like it or not. It doesn't. This is out of the world. This is killing it right now.
Yeah. I know a song's hot when my wife like loves it.
Okay. Cause
she's that person.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
She hates hip hop. She don't really listen to rap that much. But she'll like, if something like a song like that, I was like, yeah. And when I knew she liked that song, I was like, yeah,
there it is.
I was like, yeah.
When I was playing baseball, the I forget what song it was, but the You Can Find Me in St. Louis, dun 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 dun, dun that song. Anyway, regardless,
all of them.
Yeah,
but I'm with you. I'm with
that
you.
Was my walkout jam. When we could have walkout jams in middle school. So
interesting.
When did these songs come out? Because maybe I wasn't married. I'm not sure. I don't even remember when
I was.
It's getting hot in here. When is it?
I was in college, so we're like the same age.
I wasn't married then.
Yeah, we're like the same
age. So I guess it was my girlfriend. I don't know. Somebody like this.
Somebody ain't like it.
Yeah, but she wasn't Nigerian though. No. She was from Memphis.
Yeah, but what?
Regardless of what's happening right now, Nelly decided to not pay his taxes for who knows how long.
Did he like decide not to, or did he think that he like
his accountant?
His
accountant stole $200 million from him. If in fact he thought he was,
That's 9 times out of 10 what I hear about artists a lot. Well, let me not say that. Some artists just don't believe in the IRS. Is like it just doesn't exist.
They Wesley Snipes,
right?
And then the IRS show up.
IRS like, we believe in us.
We take
Lauryn Hill. We got you.
Yeah, like
we got you.
I'm real.
But yeah, so was it that he just was like, I'm just not going to do this? Or did he pay someone and they didn't follow through?
So the funny part about Nelly hasn't spoken about this, and neither has his camp in any way, shape, or form yet.
Interesting.
He's been very quiet, but basically a publication did an article. They found out that he was $200 million in debt to the IRS.
Lord.
And they did, and they basically published the figure of, it was like 23 million streams was what it was going to take. No, it has to be more than that. 23 billion
sounds
streams
right.
Of Hot in Here in order to get him out of debt.
Man.
So they published this number, and then they're like, if this many streams happen, he'll get out of debt. And so literally the hashtag Save Nelly starts trending, and everyone starts turning on Hot in Here on mute. When they walk into the office, turn it on, repeat all day long on mute. And it's some ridiculous number. And it's like, it started trending number one on iTunes again.
Are you serious?
It's been crazy to watch this all happen. But people.
That's what I'm saying. I'm like, wait, what? These people love Nelly like that. A lot of it is it's hilarious. Part of that is just like kind of like the F you to the system.
Sure. Because they don't want to, if they were like, if I was in that position, I would hope that someone would do something like this
right,
for me.
Right, right.
But there were the best list that came out was the 5 reasons you have to stream Hot in Here right now. And like, it was like the Band-Aid.
What is up with what was the Band-Aid? Did he ever explain that?
He did. I feel like this is one of those things where it's a justification that if it's true, then it's like, oh, that's really nice. But if it's not, then I just lied. You know what I'm saying? But I feel like I want to say it had to do with like something with his sister, you know, who passed away,
who had
the
sickle cell anemia,
something like that. Yeah. It was some like autoimmune disease that was debilitating. I felt like it was something like that, but I don't know if that was true. Or not. I might have just lied. My nose might be growing. But regardless, so the Band-Aid was one of the reasons.
I mean, that'd help the streaming if that's the case.
And then number two was his role in The Longest Yard.
He actually did a decent job in that movie. I mean, the movie was terrible. But
when he ran that football, you were like,
I believed he was a running back. He's an athlete, though.
He
played like minor league baseball or something.
Yeah. He was serious about that. Yeah. Like, it was about to go down.
And then the third one was he brought in the new age of the click. So like the St. Lunatics and like making the click cool again.
Interesting.
What was some of the other ones? I think
somebody just made that up because I'm pretty sure clicks don't die.
They always
there's always been like Terror Squad and, and G-Unit.
But St. Lunatics were the first time like, I'll just throw myself under the bus. The white kids knew like who was in the clique.
You were trying to get that Murphy.
D12. You didn't know D12? You didn't know D12?
I did, but probably after. Like the D12 album came out after this whole Nelly St. Lunatics thing.
Right, but anyway.
It took M a while to go back for D12.
He's like, let me get my career.
Yeah, let me get my six albums out before. Because this is not going to go well.
But it was so funny, like, when I saw the Save Nelly, like, hashtag, I just so didn't want it to be another black man taken down by the IRS. I was like, please be Nelly Furtado. Like, please be somebody get Nelly Furtado out of like, here. Of all like, the things to get us, not taxes.
Is she Australian? What is she?
I don't know.
Canadian? No, she's Canadian.
I think she's Canadian. I messed with Nelly
Canadian
Furtado.
White women need to take an L.
Just one.
Just take one L. Because I don't know if they've ever been on the losing side of anything.
So, Celine Dion, stay winning.
Winning. Did you see her on Jimmy Fallon acting a straight fool? Not following the rules of the game. I was like, you're not that big.
Right.
You can follow some rules.
I think Sheryl Crow, I think, is Canadian too. I think.
Oh, what's the name? No, that's Taylor Swift. Anyway, oh girl.
She might as well be Canadian.
Oh, freak, was her? She was popping. Avril Lavigne.
Skater girl.
She definitely was.
Canadian. She was something that
I forget that Justin Bieber's Canadian.
He out here singing Thug Mansion now. You saw that?
No, I didn't.
He's singing. He got an acoustic version of Thug Mansion.
This bro. So it's crazy now that there's people who I interact with, like, they're legitimate Justin Bieber. Like, that's who they grew up with. They're like, that's my dude.
He's Justin. Moved from, like, this, like, side, like, this teen thing that you did to now, like, no, he's, like, a real artist.
Yeah.
Like, he's, like, cool.
Like, you're talking about, like, yo, so who, like, I was somebody, like, hey, yo, Justin Timberlake or Justin Bieber.
And that's what
like,
I was about Justin to Bieber. Ask. Is he on Justin Timberlake's level now?
Oh, yes. Well, it depends on who you talk to, I guess. You know, I don't know.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I still think as Justin Bieber is a joke.
Yeah, me too.
But I know he's talented. Right, I'm not gonna, he's a talented dude, but absolutely. I still see him as like this bratty joke who, anyway.
Crazy. I tell you, someone else who's moved on from like just little, like a little kind of neat niche thing, but is now grown very large, and that is Donald Glover. That is Childish Gambino, who has just put out, we're now in the second week of his show, Atlanta. Have y'all seen it? Have y'all caught it? Anybody?
I've yet to watch it. I want to, but I've yet to see it.
Yeah. I have. I've seen the first episode.
You saw the first episode. Okay. Mm-hmm. So similar to me, I saw the first episode and most of the second. I haven't watched the third ep was yesterday, I think, is when it aired or whatever. What are your thoughts, man? What do you think?
So I have to start with saying I came in with very, very high expectations that this show was going to be it. Was going to be the show that kind of went down and was, you know, the next The Walking Dead for the FX, kind of like their anchor show that could go on and on season to season, and maybe it will. And like Donald Glover is an actor who I think everything I've seen him in, he always defies kind of like the natural archetypes of who's like that character should be normally. Like his role in Mars, was it the Matt Damon one, The Martian.
Yeah, The Martian.
Yeah, yeah. His role in that movie, like, the way he kind of plays this mad scientist, like, super smart kid, like, very true to who he is, I think, too, outside in the music realm as Childish Gambino. But, so I came in, all that's to say, super high expectations, and it was good. It was good.
So you're just like, it was all right?
It was, I don't know if the first episode is just a true setup and I need to get into episode 2 and 3 to start kind of getting into the character development and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But it just seemed like super fast, almost like, hey, this is the trailer for the entire season. And now we're going to flush out each of these moments.
So I can say like, I really messed with it. I had very low expectations for the show. Like,
really?
I mean, let me start out how it started, right? When I first heard of this, they just said Donald Glover's doing this show in Atlanta, based in Atlanta, about rappers. That's how it was billed like 2 years ago, a year and a half ago. And I was like, oh, this is trash. Like, this is not going to be good. Because I thought it was going to be like a reality show. Yeah. And I was like, oh, no, I could care less about this. And then I it slowly started to move to like, oh, this is going to be something else. Then I started to get like really like judgmental. Like, well, he really grew up in Stone Mountain. Like, really Atlanta, you know what I mean? So I started to feel that way. Super protectionism and like really haughty about it. But then by the time I saw the first trailer, I was like, yo, this might act. And like the trailer was right around the corner from where I stay, actually. And I was like, oh, this is like really in the city. Like, this is kind of interesting. Mm-hmm. So the show, I think I was really impressed with it. Like, it was it's super dry, super it's you know, it's been likened in a lot of ways to like Aziz Ansari's Master of None. Mm-hmm. Which was on Netflix as a show and really broke out for him. I messed with it a lot, and I like Donald Glover as an actor a lot of times. I'm largely indifferent to him as like his music, honestly. Mm-hmm. I just don't have a connection to it. Yeah, I think he's talented. I think he can rap.
I'm the same.
But there's nothing about it that like endears me to him as a musician. You know what I mean? But I know people who ride with him like that for real. And the only thing I saw of him that I just didn't mess with at all was I didn't think his stand-up was funny, which I wish David was here to like speak to that, because I just thought it was like, you just trying to do too much. Like, just
trying to show us how talented you are. And right now
just choose one of them, bro. Two of them,
because he's been a writer on some shows too.
He
right
wrote on 30 Rock.
And then
of course he was on Community, which he did an amazing job on that show.
But that's how I kind of got connected to him.
Sure, was sure.
And that then was amazing. Found out he was a rapper.
Yeah, right.
And then I was like, he's Troy?
Pretty much. And I thought he just sounded like Lil Wayne, but like suburban. Right. And so I was just absolutely. Like, I just would rather listen to Wayne if I wanted to do that. But all that is to say, I think I'd be interested to hear your take on it whenever you do get to watch it. It's definitely the first episode is up for free. You know, you can view it on YouTube or anywhere.
I love the idea of Donald Glover. So that's one thing that he's going to win with me, because I'm going to give him the pass because of the first, like, so after I knew him as Troy on Community and people start, you know, hitting me to Childish Gambino, I would watch like the freestyles or like the little singles he would drop. But the first album was Camp. And I love that album because of the content more so than like he was just this amazing rapper. I thought he was a cool guy. Like Adon said, like, he's talented. You can't deny that he has skill.
Right.
But it wasn't anything that endeared me to him as an artist that, you know, makes me love other artists. And so the content, I was like, man, he's challenging all kind of like social norms that people assume about black men, and you know, whether it be the masculinity, whether it be I'm supposed to do this, I'm supposed to act this particular way, you know. And I was like, yeah, that's dope, because that's a lot of things that I struggled with growing up. And so following him in that, I appreciate who he is. I like the idea that he, like, his hair is just kind of randomly nappy, and I don't know about the not wearing deodorant situation.
I've heard that.
But the fact that he sings too a little bit, you hold a note. When I heard him sing Tamia's joint, I was like, this is amazing.
He killed that, yeah.
And then, you know, like I said, like, he's not really, his stand up is a little suspect. And so, but I'm interested in this Atlanta thing because I'm like, yo, I think he's doing for it. He's creating the very thing that I've always argued on this podcast, is that I think he's bringing variety to the African-American
narrative
and television especially.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think what was good about the show too is, like, you know, of course he fought really hard for an all black writing staff, which I thought was important in a lot of ways, because in this case, in terms of making a statement to for the authenticity of what he wanted to write.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, he talks about getting one note, or particularly about how the drug dealer person in the show, who also was a rapper, talked about how, like, hey, they wanted him to have, like, live in the, like, the network note was kind of like, hey, we want him to, like, he should live in like a trap house type deal. Pretty much, right? Wanted him in the bluff, right? And he was just like, no, like, I know drug dealers who stay in a very, not like balling Tony Montana style, but they like have just a normal like house or like apartment that they are just, No, this is where he's going to be in. You know what I mean? And I thought that even fighting for little things like that was really important for the authenticity of the show and in terms of the authenticity of what's being visibly shown. Because I think what you'll see whenever you do get to watch the show is that it's a very, like, a lot of the humor is, like I said, it's very dry, but it's also, like, poignant. And it's, I found it witty in ways and smart and, like, less of, like, there's a place for this type of humor, but it's less of like Tracy Morgan big over the top. Just like, I'm just gonna say something and you might laugh at it or you might not laugh
at
it, but it's just gonna keep the hilarity of comedy. The thing. So
yeah,
so I messed with, and I also liked, you know, there's a lot of things that were very particular to Atlanta, like, you know, in the second ep, like they go to J.R. Crickets for like wings or whatever, like in particular or whatever. Even in the first episode, like the conversations that are being had, like it's about, oh, like, you know, there's references to like Compound. There's references to like Follies, even as like a strip club here in Atlanta. Strip clubs certainly a huge part of Atlanta culture. But like these are the way that they're talking about it, even the ordering of the wings, like lemon pepper wet. Like these are ways that like are, you know, uniquely I won't even say just uniquely Black, but it's certainly uniquely Southern. Certainly uniquely, like, you find here in a wing culture here in Atlanta. Well, so,
I'll say this too. It was crazy because driving through Hollywood, there's this huge billboard of Atlanta with like the cover of the three main characters with the peaches in their mouth.
Yeah,
and it was just this moment of like, you know, even being in film, doing what I do. You know, LA is always the destination. That's what people talk about. This is where you need to be. And it was this very kind of reversal of our city is something, not only is it about our city, but it's being created here by people from here.
Right.
And it's cool to, even for me, not really growing up in the city of Atlanta, giving me like pride of like, this is my city. This is cool. Yeah.
That's dope. It, what's the name? I found out Stranger Things was shot in Atlanta too.
Yeah.
About an hour south of Atlanta. Yeah.
It was like Douglasville, Jackson. Mm-hmm. And,
you see that quarry, immediately you're like, oh yeah, that's us. Mm-hmm. That quarry is, Walking Dead uses that a lot, or used that a lot actually.
Oh yeah, I didn't even think about that.
But yeah, man, so.
Atlanta's got it popping on in the film industry and television industry, definitely.
We running it. Man, we're just going to keep rapid fire questions going just because it's been so long. We just figured we talk about a little bit of everything.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently, all three of us are participating in a protest right now. If you didn't know this, because we are sitting down. Apparently, like, really? Sitting down is serious act is D1 of protest. Music. Oh man!
Oh gosh, are we back there? Are we back there? Is that man? Could that man not live?
Sorry, it's been sitting inside of me for like 3 months.
D1 was like, I had the summer off. Dan's back to ruin me.
Oh my gosh, bro! I think I met people at Legacy who was just like, "Yo, man, tell Dan to back off of D1, man. He's a good dude."
That's what they said. They said he was a good dude. You know what they didn't say? That he had good music.
They probably said that too.
They didn't.
That's what just came out of my mouth.
So, man, I want to move on to this protest thing, but I meant to ask you about Legacy. Yo, not too long ago, We were on Off the Record. You talking about if you get to see Cross Movement live?
Oh, come on, bruh. Son!
And you got to see Cross Movement live,
and I got
live.
To see him live,
and you went
bro.
Nuts.
And I didn't even know that was gonna happen.
Yeah.
So I get there, and then I find out that they're doing a concert, and they put them like during the day, which is somewhat shady, but it also was dope because there was no other performances, right?
Yeah.
So that means they get a stage, and everybody's attention between a break and And so, yo, they out there, they got a band, and then I hear they're about to perform, so I'm like, yo, I'm gonna be cool. I'm not gonna fan out.
Right.
You know what I mean? I'll just be in like somewhat front.
Right.
But not all the way in the front.
Because I don't want to take up all
night. You know what I'm saying? I don't want to mess, I don't want to ruin my fresh. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Bro, they got into that first song. I was like, oh, I remember this. Oh. Bro, I think by the second verse, I was in the front jumping up and down. I was going crazy, dude. I think like The Truth was next to me. Then you had Wado. Nice. You had Jay Sean. It was just a bunch. It was just like a bunch of old heads who was right. just like, "Yo, this was these were our heroes." Yes,
right.
And I think Rapzilla like put a lot of it on camera. It was crazy, man. I was like, "Yo, this is dope." That's it made me, up. And I thought it was dope just for them to see that. Are to get to feel appreciated as a unit.
Sure.
You know what I mean? It's bittersweet in the sense that, you know, obviously Enoch and Fish wasn't there. Mm-hmm. And Fisher was sick, and then obviously a couple of weeks later he passed away.
Right.
So and I tweeted, I was like, the only thing I'm missing right now is Fish. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But it was a really dope moment, and I know there was a lot of folks who really, really enjoyed that.
Yeah.
And it was real, bro. I told you, it's like all I needed was New Edition. I think it was Tribe Called Quest.
Right. Like, yeah. Something like that.
Yeah. That's it. That's all I need.
That's dope. I asked about that because it was, I definitely saw the stream. I think my homeboy, Ashanti, you know Ashanti?
Yeah.
He had thrown it up there or whatever. And I was watching his, I was like, oh, there goes show. Oh, that show jumping up and down.
Show going in.
That's Joe Shrew. That's show screaming. Oh, that's just show.
That's just I'm just showing out there.
Yeah, okay. But no, that was dope. I definitely was geeking out watching all that.
Yeah, it was pretty dope, man. It was pretty dope.
But yeah, man. So Colin Kaepernick just became,
my goodness.
He just
that brother went from like light skin to straight.
I mean, it's a fine line between
is he
Don
black?
Lemon to, and,
yeah, exactly.
and Huey Newton.
Yeah, that brother went from like, are we sure he's black? To like, yo, that brother Huey P. Newton right there. No, ain't he in the Bay too?
Ain't he in the Bay too? But man, so as you all are well aware now, this, you know, he sat down for a few of his. Let me also back up. 4th and 10 has definitely talked about this
right.
beforehand or whatever, so definitely check out those episodes and their new one.
They don't have anything good.
But they ain't got nothing like us.
They ain't seen nothing of substance.
You know what I'm saying? So, but nonetheless, so Kaepernick gets up there and sits down.
he gets up there and he's like, I have no respect for you or your anthem.
He sits down. What's interesting though is he just sat down, didn't say anything. Mm-hmm. He was then asked
right.
about it a couple games later in the preseason. And that is when he was like, oh, I've got an answer for you.
Yes.
And just was very controlled about what he had to say, what he wasn't saying, all of that. But I think what's interesting is that with this stand, it was literally a stand. It was much, I feel like it was much more than what, you know, D-Wade, LeBron, Melo, they did at the ESPYs. Because when you get up there and you just say a general everything, like
yeah, you speak to everybody, no one.
And every cause, then no one has to make a decision exactly. about anything.
Let's stop the violence.
About
everybody, just stop killing everybody.
Can we just love? I want to stand for love.
I want to stand for love.
And so yeah, it was. I feel like the interesting thing about this is that it literally has forced people to take a position or to at least speak to what's being talked about. I will say that with a caveat though, is because with that, a lot of the conversation has gone around the method of the protest as opposed to the actual
reason
source of what he was actually about. And I have my own thoughts about that, but I just wanted to set it up real quick. What are you guys' thoughts? We haven't all talked about it. The Kaepernick protest.
I have so much to say.
I know.
I think you
go first.
Man, I don't know where to start. There's so much to say about
this.
Right?
There's a lot.
Because like you said, there's so many moving parts. So like, and I think there's a lot of distraction and detractors who are intentionally are trying to move it away from the reason why he's protesting to shame him into, like, I love when people pull the straw man of veterans and armed forces and like those, the liberties that people fight for aren't for the liberties of protests, right? Mm-hmm. And no, it's for the liberties of solidarity with those people who, you know what I'm saying? Like, come on, shut up. So there's a couple things that I think that have really intrigued me during this situation. One came out immediately after, well, it was brought to light, but there was a documentary that was done by a student at Morgan State about the national anthem which kind of went viral and led to a lot of people writing about this third stanza in the national anthem, which I had no, this like blew my mind.
I know,
but I was like, what? And the most powerful thing about this this particular documentary is Morgan State, for you guys to know, HBCU. And at the end of the documentary, it's a short, it's like 15 minutes, they have this all black choir singing the third stanza.
Wow.
Which I wish I can read it. Do you?
I can pull it up.
Yeah, if you pull it up, because we can read some of the lyrics. And basically, it's some very incendiary stuff. Francis Scott Keyes is making direct references to slaves and fighting against the slaves who went to the North to fight against slavery in the South. And he was basically agitating them. So anyway, that's one. The other thing, which just got was revealed, I think, today or yesterday, was this idea of paid patriotism, which the United States Armed Forces, am I correct, paid the National Football League for football players to come out to stand and salute the flag. And that was in 2009.
Yeah, so this is actually a story that's came out about 6 months ago. And now it's being brought back up just because of everything that's happening. But it got surfaced 6 months ago. And yes, the government pays the National Football League for the time before the games to sing the national anthem. Because if you go to a college football game, there's no national anthem. If you go to like a lot of sporting league, like
games, like soccer, they don't do national.
There's no national anthem. Right. There is a baseball, I think.
Football, basketball, they do it.
But the time for the football games is generally paid for, like the flyovers paid for.
Well, they did the national anthem. It's just they were in the locker room at the time. Yeah,
football players were not on the field beforehand.
Got it. Okay, so regardless.
I was at a Braves game. Quick story. I was at a Braves game 2 years ago, and I was taking a bunch of students. And I took my daughter's homeschool co-op. I was one of the parents who volunteered to take them, and we were in the courtyard area where there's food, and they were doing a national anthem, and we were sitting at the table, and they were like, please rise for the national anthem. And I was like, hey, this bull. So I sat there, and the students just sat there and ate too. And then when it was done, this old white lady walked up to me. I'm so ashamed of you right now. She went off on me. I was like, ma'am. And I was just basically like, ma'am, this song wasn't written for me. Yes. I was like, I'm sorry I disappoint you, but I don't know what to tell you. So I've never really been a fan of the national anthem. Now, I will say this. The one thing I respect about what Colin Kaepernick is doing is he's not disrespecting other people's opportunity to acknowledge. Like, he's not screaming, running around, trying to be a distraction. He's just like, all right, I'll just... And that's how I've always felt. Like, I'm not saying I've never stood up for the national anthem.
Right.
But if I didn't feel like doing it, I'm not. Yeah. Right?
So do you wholeheartedly mean what you just said, that you don't feel like it was written for you? In the sense of, now, being clear, we need to distinguish, and I think Colin Kaepernick's doing a good job of this, actually. I think this is the point. Idealism and reality are two very different things.
Uh-huh.
I'm asking the question out of the idealistic reality that it wasn't written for you.
Ideally, it's evolved into it's evolved into something that encompasses all Americans.
Okay.
Yes.
Cool. I was just curious.
So you can go on explaining the paid patriotism or
just your thoughts.
Your thoughts on it.
Yeah. So for me, I think I began this skeptical. I'm not going to lie. I'm not going to front for anybody. I kind of came at this of, this is interesting that of all people that I thought was going to, you know, be the athlete that was going to make this stand and cause these conversations to happen, I did not think Colin Kaepernick was going to be it. This dude runs into end zones and kisses his biceps. So his ability to have like a very clear understanding of, hey, this isn't necessarily happening to me, but I know it's happening, and I know it's happening to people that I care about, so I need to do something about it. And this is, and I'm going to start. So at the beginning, I was skeptical of his motivations. But I'm glad that I gave it space to see it play out, because I think as it's gone on, he's proven himself, one, to be very thoughtful, mm-hmm. and two, to be very strategic, and three, at times, like, withholding comments that if I were him, I would lash out at people, like the Trent Dilfer comments came out.
That brother needs to be slapped.
If I were Colin Kaepernick, I would have derailed the whole thing that moment, because I would have gone at his throat.
Yeah. I thought that too.
And I was very impressed with his ability to be like, man, that's ridiculous. But let me talk about further what I'm here to talk about, which is there's this disparity in justice, and we're going to do something about it. So I really appreciate the evolution also of the kneeling. Mm-hmm. Because for me, the sitting, there's a level of disrespect there that I understand why he could sit, and I wouldn't argue with his desire to do that. But for me, I think the kneeling is like, it brings this spiritual aspect into it. Like, this is something that we as a country, especially as Christians, should be praying for, seeking. And every time I see him kneeling, like, it reminds me, like, I need to be praying right now. This is something that...
Just to be clear, praying about what exactly?
Praying that justice would come in this country.
Okay.
That this disparity, and that this... that specifically the police violence and the targeting of African-American males, mm-hmm. we could find some resolution to it. Now, do I think that it's going to create change? I'm still skeptical of that. Mm-hmm. I think it's creating conversations, mm-hmm. but I think you compare it to what's happening in Charlotte or in North Carolina right now, that the ACC has pulled... or the NCAA has pulled the first two rounds of the Final Four or March Madness from Carolina. Mm-hmm. I think that's going to hurt people in the wallets. Mm-hmm. And I think that is actually going to create more change, because financially it's hurting North Carolina. Mm-hmm. And they will now change their same-sex bathroom laws, because they can't continue to be hurt in that way. So for me, I'm disenchanted, unfortunately, because it's like, man, for me, this is a far deeper issue. But unfortunately, it's hard to, one, say this is the change we need to see, because there's, how do you quantify? Well, we need to see no more lives lost. Is that what we're asking for? I think is one, and there's this gray area of what is success, and two, financially, no one's hurting. It's not hurting anyone, him kneeling. People are having conversations. The story will eventually die. And I don't think a lot of change is going to come from it, unfortunately. So,
I got you. So I think even backing up, I would say my thoughts about the Kaepernick thing. Like, him evolving it to kneeling from sitting, he could have stayed sitting and I'd have been fine. Yeah. He could have stayed sitting. Him evolving to kneeling, I thought was fine as well, too. What that did show me, if anything, was just that he's thinking this through, in the sense of, like, it's evolving, and he's not rigid in his protest. It's like, oh, I'm willing to adjust for this or for that. Even though he was pitch perfect clear what this was and what this wasn't. It mm-hmm. wasn't his responsibility that people got offended on behalf of military, or military people even got offended. Like, yo, that's not what I'm doing. That's not what this is about, whatever. But regardless, I respected that piece of it. What I'd say also is that, like, I found it really interesting that, like, everyone tasked him with what he's going to do next after kneeling or after this protest. It's like, did he start racism? Did he start systemic injustice, inequality? Like, why is it up to him to figure out what the next step is for him in this? Like, mm-hmm. that's not his responsibility. And the fact that a lot of people asked that of him said to me they had no real interest in doing something in their own lives or advocating some change on their end. Like, I just found it as another means of deflection and another means of placing the onus on the on the subject of oppression to remedy oppression. And I just felt that was really stupid. I also felt it was stupid that people felt like he should not say anything because he makes a lot of money or was privileged or was a backup quarterback like that shit Trent Dilfer said. Like, I just, all of that was just garbage to me. There were so many levels to things that I thought were just distractions and deflections of people dealing with it. And let me be very clear, white supremacy does not have to be hosted in a white person. There was as many black people who were spouting very, very much parroting things that were just as problematic as any of those things that you might hear from someone that would, you know, be on the other side of that issue.
But I will say this though, I'm sure you're not saying this. All critiques and challenges of Kaepernick is not steeped in white supremacy.
No, not at all. Yeah. I am not saying that you could not find criticisms with it,
right,
and that inherently makes you racist or something along.
I mean,
it's
talking about black folks too, like black people who criticize.
Not at all. I'm not saying that either. Yeah. But what I will say about it is that if the way in which you processed your critique of him was on the levels of saying that if the way in which you approached a criticism of him, of whatever the protest may be, if you focused more on the issue, more on that than the actual issue, if you could not even pair it to say, I understand what this issue is, I understand where this is coming from, and that is a worthwhile issue. Like, I judged that. Yeah. I absolutely did judge that. I also
judged the idea that people don't expect athletes to, like, all that you expect them to do is to play football.
Absolutely.
Like, that's another thing. Like, it's garbage. Only thing that people can do is expel or can stay within the realm of the vocation. To me, that's ridiculous. Like, if you're telling me only thing I should be able to speak on is things of rap.
Right.
Then I think, you know, that's a very narrow view of human beings and our intellect and just as a society.
So, and to continue that part, I think that, so while I was not looking for Kaepernick to do more, the fact that he has done more, I welcomed that. I like the idea that, okay, he was just like, all right, I'm going to then donate $1 million towards this, and I'm then going to look at my jersey sales that have risen to something, blah, blah, blah. Like, I thought,
amen.
I mean, he was the number one jersey.
Number one jersey, yeah.
That says
a whole lot.
A lot.
Yeah.
And I think, bro, for your jersey to be the number, that means white people are buying your jersey too. That ain't just black folk. That means everybody. So that speaks volumes to, it is almost the anti-narrative of what we're hearing on TV.
Yeah.
Like, it's totally. Like, so if his jersey is outselling Peyton Manning and
Tom Brady
and Cam Newton, this means that there's a lot of people who agree with what he's doing and who are excited about what he's doing.
Yeah.
And we don't get that from the narrative of on TV.
Even what Trent Dilfer said, he said, something along the lines of, he's a distraction and this team, and it's causing friction in the locker room or something to that extent. I'm sorry, I'm paraphrasing. They won 23-0. They made the new LA Rams look like a JV high school team. That team was unified. That team was excited to play together. If you know, this protest has done a lot of things. It's caused a lot of conversation. It's caused a lot of people to like have to deal with it. And so just to clarify what I meant about why I was thankful he kneeled, I think too, the sitting, it was polarizing. The kneeling, for whatever reason, you can't have the same like visceral reaction to someone kneeling during the national anthem, because to me, kneeling is like this level of like, I am desperate for something. And so as I had conversations with white friends who had issues with the very stereotypical, he's offending people that are veterans or whatever. When he started kneeling, I was like, look, that argument doesn't even work anymore.
Yeah. And when does the national anthem connect to veterans? Like, what is this like?
Whole other thing. Because we also want to talk about like, the state, and this is what happens when we take a break, because there's so many parts of this story. Because then there was the heightened element of 9/11, right?
Yes,
right. And so obviously he didn't play on 9/11, he played on 9/12, but all of this thing kind of got larger because there was this idea of 9/11. And Bomani Jones makes this point, which I think is really kind of interesting, is that it was not until 9/11 that we started to lump police officers in with military and armed forces. And it was post 2001 in which, because running into those buildings and were firemen and were policemen, like it wasn't, we didn't have National Guard, we didn't have militarized force. So now we have the militarization of our local police force. And then we also have now placed police on the same level as we do our armed services. And I'm not saying that police officers do not risk their lives every day. They absolutely do. But in the public zeitgeist, there was this switch that happened around 9/11 to where now we put them all on the same level. Mm-hmm. And it was just interesting that now Kaepernick's protest having to do with this inequities with regard to policing now then shifted and changed. And now like veterans, now it gets like warped in with police officers. And it was just fascinatingly let me say this whole thing unfold.
I'm excited that he decided to give the proceeds of his jerseys to community action groups and a portion of his salary. But he didn't have to do that. And I would still think that his actions were plaudible and were amazing, just in the simple fact that he took a significant stand in kneeling and sitting down, because look at all of the things that have been revealed because of it. Yeah. Like, there's a lot of information out there that people, like, it's amazing when protests happen. It brings things to light.
Yeah.
Because people start to research and they start to read and they start to develop, like, okay, so why is this important to America? Why is, like, what does real patriotism mean? Yeah. And I think that's what we have to start to, like, I believe in patriotism, and I believe patriotism is important for countries to function well. Because if you have a bunch of citizens who don't love their country, you're going to have a problem. Mm-hmm. But I think what's happening is
Greece.
What'd you say?
You have Greece.
As in the movie Grease?
No, as in the country Grease.
Oh, okay. I don't know why I did go to Grease the country. I'm sorry. My bad. I just don't respect Grease, I guess, like that.
It's all good.
Oh, bankrupt. No, okay. No, but I do think in order for people to feel like they are true citizens and that they can truly feel the patriotism that every other American who's complaining about, we have to start redefining what true patriotism is in America. That is somewhat of my problem with saluting our singing the national anthem and acknowledging all things America and patriotism, because I just don't. I love America, the country. I love the idea. I love the idea of America, and I love what it can be. Mm-hmm. But I also recognize that it is deeply flawed, mm-hmm. and there's a lot of problems. And if we continue down this road as what I'm thinking, Kaepernick, then we're going to have some problems, and we have to address it. And just the simple fact that he's putting his career on the line, there's been articles that kind of that's resurrected the story of Mahmoud Abdul-Rauf, with the different Nuggets, who was like one of my favorite players when I was young. I used to love Chris Jackson. Mainly because I was loving Shaq, and I was like, who is this little dude killing it with Shaq at LSU? And so I follow him. And then this brother, he lives in Atlanta. I don't know if he does anymore, but I used to catch him at the LA Fitness. And I remember like 6 years ago, he sat down and he was telling everybody the story about his protest and why he got and how he got ostracized and blackballed by the league. And I was just sitting there like, this is deep.
Yeah.
Cause he was an amazing player.
Amazing player.
How do you just disappear? Like the next year you're just like, you're no good. You can't make a jump shot anymore.
Yeah.
So
it's a very interesting thing. I will, in closing this part, just cause there's so many parts we could continue to talk about. But I do think intersectionality figures into this part as well, too, where we are saying that, like, you know, the idea that, you know, the initial narrative that veterans should have an issue with Kaepernick, as though there aren't black veterans who also had an issue with everything. It was just very, very, very fascinating. And even more than that, the story that this is a distraction about the method, it was like the media, you're telling the story, like you're talking about the method. If you...
now you're spending like the next week talking about how this isn't an effective protest because y'all were talking about the method. But
it does help that he ain't playing because it would probably be a distraction to him if he was actually the starting quarterback. And he sucks now. So that's nothing. <It's
pretty. laughs> Like, man, he got that girl Nessa. You know he dating Nessa? Do you know Nessa?
I don't know who Nessa is.
Nessa's a DJ out of the Bay who now is like works at Hot 97. She took over Angie Martinez's spot or whatever. But she got him.
She holds up
exactly, but I'm sure she got him.
Something got to that.
She got him vegan though, which is why he lost all that weight.
That's why he can't throw the ball no more.
But man, Teacher Bay, y'all
talking about women that just
talk about women. Women, man.
I don't know which Teacher Bay you talking about
because I'm worried about the one in the pink dress.
What is happening?
Really quick. So you know, social media was set on fire. Day before yesterday, because it was like days of school. A woman took a picture. It's like nothing like that. This woman who was a fourth grade teacher took a picture in her classroom, talking about excited to teach the kids, excited for this year, excited for all of this. And while some people saw that and were like, oh, that's good that she is excited. We need teachers who are engaged.
I like the way you're putting it.
So. There were many others who had other thoughts when they saw her. Some thought that what she was wearing was inappropriate for a teacher. Some loved what she was wearing as a teacher and wished they were in her class. Nonetheless, this is a black woman here in Atlanta.
And she's got curves. Yeah, she got a lot of curves.
She's a grown woman.
She is grown.
And
so let me say this.
Dan, you threw this on the docket. You the one who threw this on the docket. What you got to say?
Yeah, I did.
Dan?
So,
nice and married, Dan.
Yo, I am very married and very happy.
Happily married, Dan.
Shout out to my wife.
Who's about to roll back into high school.
I want to say that if I was in this fourth grade class, I would have been very excited about going to school on the first day of school. And I actually had a teacher like this who I remember very clearly, was my favorite period of the day and always look forward to it. Now, I will say this teacher is crazy if she thinks that she is 100% like that she didn't look herself in the mirror and say, I'm going to turn every... Yeah. Now, where does that onus lie, right? That is a slippery slope, and people will hear this and say, well, that's not her responsibility.
Right.
She should be able to wear whatever she wants to. That's on the viewer. I don't 100% rock with that. It's that statement. Yeah. I understand the heart behind it is like, you're now victimizing the victim.
Off top, let's be very clear. We are three men talking about this. We should put that out there. We are three very, very much heterosexual men
talking about this.
We are talking about that through this lens.
Yeah.
And so we want to be clear that there are other perspectives that we will try to give credence to, but we will probably fail at that. So please continue.
Potentially touching on other viewpoints, I'll give the viewpoint that I know. I was a fourth grader at one point in time. If I walk in and that's my teacher, at fourth grade, things were happening. I had enough hormones going on in my body that I was like, I like this teacher.
Mm-hmm.
And doing that as a teacher, I think you're distracting from, you're not going to the club, sister. You are teaching an 8-year-old boy how to add and subtract and multiply. I struggle to understand why she wanted to look that
fourth grade way. Is like, look, fourth grade, I'm not really like concerned about students being distracted in the fourth grade, though I understand what you're saying. And I was a little fast tail boy in the fourth grade, so yes, I would have had those similar thoughts. But depending on, I think geography matters a lot, like depending on where she teaches. If it's in a context where, like, you know, it's a bunch of fast mature fourth grade students, then kids seem to learn a lot more in certain contexts because of what they see at home or what their parents allow them to watch and whatnot. So I would say two things. I would say that I don't know how I feel about. Now, there is a such thing as inappropriate dress in the workplace. I do believe that. Do I believe that was inappropriate? I don't know. Like, I land. Now, is it definitely an attention grabbing like attire? Yes, it is. Like, if I was at high school, like I would wonder why she. Now, this is what I will say. She could be either naive or she could be doing this in protest. And I think if it's in protest, I get it more than her just being naive. But even in that sense, it's like I still give grace because I don't know there's too many. I don't know if there's a bunch of things that men can wear that we feel like facts. Like we'll be challenged. Like, yo, do you understand that you're being a distraction? Yada, 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 yada. And if that is the case, then we are naive as well. And you're like, you know what? I need to be more mindful.
Yeah,
because I know there are certain dudes who can wear a tight shirt and they're muscular.
Yeah, Bishop Eddie Long before he started on Eddie, that. You used the vegan wrong.
The wrong guy.
Sorry.
But anyway, I would say, yeah. So as an adult, I'll say this. As a mature adult who 3 years ago, man, about maybe 5 years ago would have said this is inappropriate. Now I'm like, you know, I don't necessarily have a problem. And I do believe that a lot of the male gaze needs to mature in the sense of us making like women feel like modesty is all on them.
Sure.
Like, and it's not on the responsibility of the person who has the gaze. I think that's a huge problem.
G-A-Z in our
misogynistic culture. So, but I will say she was a beautiful woman.
Yeah.
And she knows it. And look, women are smart.
Yes.
And I'm not going to attribute to her. This is what I'll say. Women are smart and they know what they're doing.
Yes.
And so she knew what she was doing.
She knew and that was where.
Now that's a whole other conversation.
I could have photoshopped
What's the motive
that
what,
I could have photoshopped that classroom out and I could have put her like in a club at Kanye's concert 2 days ago. Yeah. Like it and she would have fit in. And so I don't think that you should fit in and at the club and Kanye's concert and also in a fourth grade classroom. I just don't think that you should those two scenarios should translate from one to the other.
I'd rather understand if I understood the motive. If it was if it's intentional protest, I get it. If it's just her being naive, I was like, that's interesting. You know that you're curvy, you know that's a very tight, you know, situation.
So, hey. Yeah. So it's interesting because
I wish we hadn't let Adon go last because now he's just going to bury us in our statements.
No. Not at all.
Next time we'll just let him go first.
Not at all. Everybody.
What do you think, Adon?
Dang. Not you know that y'all out like yet.
No.
You misogynist.
No. I do think, though, that like couple things. So the grade she teaches matters to me, yeah. Right? If she was junior high, high school, it hits me differently. Yeah. Honestly, fourth grade, 10, 11, not to say you don't have those urges, but it's something on the median, on the whole, something a little bit different than if you're 13, 14, 15 up or whatever. So that's my one thought. Second thought is the idea of being a distraction. Have y'all been around kids? What isn't a distraction for kids? Like, legitimately, everything is squirrel. Like, everything, they're just looking off. Like, it doesn't matter. So part of that is that. The other thing I'd say that you know, definitely buffets a little bit of it is, from all accounts, apparently she's a very, like, accomplished teacher. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, she does like awards and has done really well with kids or whatever. So I think it does kind of suck that like this piece could potentially overshadow actual work that mm-hmm. she's doing.
Yes.
And then on the back end of that, I'd say that like she's a teacher and I know I ain't teaching. So like someone actually who's taking the time to actually work with kids and be in the situation like that, there's a level of salute where it's like, I could criticize you, but then am I actually jumping in to fill in that spot? I'm not.
Now, yeah, I don't know if I would rock with that one. I think that's, I hear you, but I, because we criticize people in other professions.
That's what we do. This is off the record.
Well, I'm not even talking about off the record. I'm just talking about politicians. You're not a politician.
Right.
And you will criticize a politician, no matter being that you're not in that particular arena.
Yeah, I guess. I guess the take, though, that I would take is that my steps to being a politician and my steps to being a teacher aren't the same with regard to how far away those steps are. But I understand the point you're making, that there is a, that there is a difference. I put it at this age is I thought about teaching. So that's why it's a bit more of a relevant statement to me.
They got to pay me more.
But nonetheless, that's where that argument comes from my end. Now, I'd say on this part, too, is that like with her, you know, the other part is she's just thick. Like at the end of the day, that's a thick woman. Yeah, like,
right.
What is she putting on where she ain't thick? I don't know.
Yeah, she got to wear like a muumuu or something like that.
Literally. And like, even when you look at that body, you're like, man, that's whatever. Could she have chosen something different that is less? I think the thing that gets me is like some of the material, like the material of that particular outfit. I was like, man, she could probably get that same dress, but not be that material. And maybe something different would happen. But all of this feels like hyper scrutinizing to me, where I am just over analyzing someone's work attire. And so that's where it's a bit unsettling. At the same time, I don't have children. And so I'm just ultimately like, I land closer to what you said, show, where it's like, I don't have a judgment per se, like, nah, she can't do this, or yeah, this is wonderful. It's just like, I just kind of am like, I don't know. Yeah. I literally don't know, honestly. Yeah. I throw my hands up on it. She fine, though. I know that much.
She's very attractive. Well,
she's not as fine as my wife. So
I got a wife yet, so she fine.
She's not fine, but she fine. So this is what I will say. I had a teacher just like you, and this was seventh grade, though, Miss Tatum. I ain't going to never forget Miss Tatum. And I remember Miss Tatum, and there's something too, and this is going to be, hopefully it doesn't come up. There's something too, young men admiring their teachers because they respect them more, right? Mm-hmm. So for Miss Tatum, I was a class clown, as you guys can probably imagine. And I went out my way to show out in every class just because I just wanted people to like me. I want to be the funny dude. But in Miss Tatum's class, first of all, Miss Tatum didn't play, but she was the finest thing in the world. I remember just thinking like, why aren't you in InVogue? You should be like the fifth member of InVogue or like Halle Berry's sister, something. And I remember in her class, I was the quietest thing. I was the most obedient. I just love, because I wanted to impress her so much. I was just like, Miss Tatum. And even to this day, when my wife makes me mad, I'm like, don't make me go look for Miss Tatum. But anyway, I think, I'm not saying that incentivizes women to dress, and I'm not saying she's scantily clad, but what I'm saying is there is something to just the idea of young men and, you know what? That doesn't sound right. I'll say this.
It impact, because I'll stand with you whatever firing squad we now face. Because Miss Rosenberg was the teacher for me, and like I'll forever remember like being in her class and very similar emotions of like when she asked me to do something, I'm like, yes, ma'am.
Yeah.
Like mm-hmm. I want to impress you. I want you to like me. I want you to accept me. And I think as young men, you are so, again, this is going to come across, and so I'm probably going to say what you stopped yourself because you're smarter than me. you're so visually stimulated.
Yeah, absolutely.
And she got my attention.
Yeah.
And she was like, hey, Dan, I was ADD. I was all over the place. Yeah. And it's like, she very much had my attention.
I don't want to make the beautiful one mad. Like,
She had everybody in our class on. Like, everybody was just... Like, bro, my whole crew was rowdy, and we were just, we were so attentive, and didn't nobody care about language arts, but during Miss Tatum's class, So, I will say, Teacher Bae, if she's getting the job done, great. I the funny thing is, the people who are complaining are grown men who can't, one, probably pull a Teacher Bae, two, people who they themselves can't control their own hormones and emotions, and when they see a woman like that, all they can think of is, oh, I want to smash.
Yeah, yeah.
And and then three people who probably work in that environment, and yet they want the attention that she probably gets from the students but can't, right? And I'm not saying it's because of her, the way she dresses or where she looks. Maybe it's probably because it's just, she's just a great teacher. So there's going to be reasons why people hate. And I'm just like, man, as long as you're doing a good job at what you do, do a good job. And I'll say, according to, I would say this, if I was the principal of that school, I wouldn't necessarily come at her and be like, yo, I need to send you home and change your clothes. Mm-hmm. I'd be like, hey, as long as she's performing and if I have an outstanding amount of complaints, I will have a conversation with her. I'll say, hey, I'm getting a lot of complaints. What do you think we should do?
Right.
And if she's like, well, I'm just going to keep dressing like this. I'm like, all right, well, your performance. Yeah, yeah. I was like, I'm going to stand by it as long as, you know. And like you said, like, there's not much. There's certain women, it don't matter what you put on, that backside is going, it's going to show. They just have all the lumps in all the right places.
And so, men are like savages. So like,
absolutely.
Like, dudes will look for it regardless. Like, bro, don't matter what you,
it don't matter, but
it is. So the idea of just like that, and again, that's not to what you were talking about earlier about the male gaze. That's not to excuse us. That's actually like almost a, like a condemnation to say like, hey, we need to do better on our end.
Absolutely.
Like, we have to work on absolutely. That. You know, and you know, cause as we all, you know, we're all Christian, like this plays out in church very often.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
absolutely.
A lot of times women come to church and they are told to, you know, having to do with modesty or purity culture or whatever it is, they are told like, hey, you know, you're tempting the men out there. And it's just like, after, you know, over time, you go like, well, okay, like at some point, are you having the conversation with the men, like with the absolutely. Boys or what's
I've
happening
had to have there? A conversation with a dude before. I was like, yo, bro, your pants are too tight.
yeah. Or even just the boys who are tempted. Yes. Like, are you having the conversation with exactly. them to say like, hey, what are you looking at? Like, how are you absolutely. Looking at? Are you looking at the Imago Dei? Are you looking at this right. woman of God? Yeah. You know, whatever.
No, all I think that's good. I think that's good, man.
Yeah, man. All that is to say, we just did a rapid fire thing of topics. We got more. We left more on the table.
Which ones we leave? Just let them know.
Well, it's interesting. Some of them were kind of outdated because we didn't get to them. I wanted to talk about that Glenn article from the Gospel Coalition. Did you read that joint about the
gosh, bro.
About the mother.
She was trying her best not to be racist.
Oh yeah. Gosh, that's a month old, but
I love that sister. It was so, I love the attempt because it was just so like, she was trying her best and it was like, sweetie, you're trying, but
I'm just really surprised they ran the article, to be honest with you.
No, I'm not surprised at all because you have a bunch of white dudes who are sitting around like, yo, this is going to really do some work. And then
you think I'm the white dude that read it. And I was like, oh God.
Well,
again, you got to judge yourself on the curve. Like you're white.
But I will something. Say this, that article was horrific. But I also appreciate what Tabiti did in following her. First of all, I didn't like the fact that they took it down. Right. Like, don't post something. Right. And then it's like a race in a tweet.
And then they threw this podcast up there where they explained all of it. Yeah.
Leave it up so people can engage it and know what, like, what's problematic about it.
Right.
But Tabiti afterwards wrote something like basically just consoling her. Like, look, I appreciate your attempt and we're thankful that you've tried. It took a lot of courage to try to boom, boom, blah, you know? And,
I felt like I'm gonna be 100% about it. When I read it, I was like, yo, this is trash. Like, this is really trash.
Uh-huh.
And I felt like, similarly, like her attempt, she thought she was doing something wonderful,
revolutionary.
She thought it was great. And people posted like, "Oh man, this is Blindside in editorial form. I love this. She's like, this is wonderful.
This is Harriet Beecher Stowe.
Right. That right. And so when I read, I was like, "Oh, there's so many problems with this. Like the fact that you didn't see this the way as it was written. You didn't see this person as a." This person literally moved from being a black man to being a child of God. That was how you, that was what you communicated almost verbatim. That's a problem. That being said, her posture upon being informed that it was problematic, I thought was amazing. And I tweeted her even just to encourage her, because she was just like, I'm grieved that what I've said, done this. And so I'm going, and I'm like, look, we're all learning. That's wonderful. That's great. Mm-hmm. I had issues with people who like, there were people who clapped back at people critiquing the article. And that bothered me, because I was like, no, like, there's a reason, like, we need to just, there's a justifiable reason to find offense with this. And that is not to say this woman's a terrible person,
right?
But it is to say that, look, this is work and this needs to be learning, because the same great intentions that wrote it and that posted it also needs to be dismantled, and that time needs to happen. You can't like rush over the dismantling for the sake of like appeasing the saints and being peaceful. And so I felt like people caped up for it before realizing exactly what needed to be saved in that context. So when I read, actually, is it Brian Laritz or Brian?
That's his name.
Yeah, yeah.
I didn't read it, but I know
he wrote a piece that I thought was very like whole, like it was very comprehensive and did a very good job of really just affirming her, but then also really speaking to truth in what was problematic and what was an issue there. But for those of y'all that don't know, I don't even think we really set it up properly.
Nah,
but nonetheless, guys, there was an article that ran on the Gospel Coalition, is that what it's called, TGC? That had to do with just basically a woman who said, when God sent my daughter, a black son-in-law or something like that.
Yeah. And the other major problem is that she never admitted her racism.
Yeah, not like, at all. Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
She just, we're supposed to assume, like, it's supposed to be insane. Or the fact that she doesn't acknowledge that she was racist.
Yeah, none of that happened.
That's like,
right.
Yeah, you had a problem and you should say that.
You should say, like, man, I was.
Exactly.
I was clearly.
Well, right. And so, and what you guys are both hitting on, what, when I read it, I was like, whoever read this literally thought The Blind Side was like the great film that it was, like,
sure,
that it was. Mm-hmm. And they didn't read the article to say, like, this lady's gonna get destroyed. Like,
protect her,
because you can tell that she has a genuine heart. Like, she spent time putting this down because she didn't know how to articulate the change that had happened in her, and this was her best effort. And no one took her aside and said, look, I think what you're trying to articulate is this, but the way that you are articulating it comes across this way. Mm-hmm. And now for your sake, we need to make sure that what you say is what you mean. And now if you mean exactly this, let's publish it and let's see what happens. Mm-hmm. And now in retrospect, I think the benefit of the article was the conversations to take place after.
Yeah. I think,
which is why you
learn.
Shouldn't take it down.
There's two things that, exactly. You should never take it down. Two, I do think there are vultures out there who are just looking to clap back at anything. Like, so we cry for allies. We cry for white people to use their privilege for our benefit, or for the benefit of other people. And then when they do, we are quick to always find, like, to castigate it to the point where it's like, oh, this is worthless. And I do grow weary and tiresome of certain people. And certain people who are pretty popular and have platforms within Christianity who seem to have no chill when it comes to those types of things. Mm. And I'm like, what you're doing is you're asking for allies, and every time these allies step up, you shoot them down. Like, it's just like, this is not going to be beneficial. Now, I do think there was a lot of critique that was helpful. I didn't read the Brian Laritz piece, but I heard about it. So you need that. You need to be like, yo, I thank you for your attempt. Here's what you may want to think about it. But the reason why I'm not like shocked at TGC is because you look at their website. Look at their website and look at the contributors. I think Tabidi is the only dude on there. Well, I'm sure they've added more people. But Tabidi is like one of the only people who's within that website who had a person of color. And I may be wrong, but and I'm pretty sure that he's not he wasn't included in the pitch meeting.
Surely not.
I'm sure he wasn't. Like, the editor, I think, just followed me on Twitter.
You said disfollow?
No, the editor did follow
me. It's a woman, Brittany?
No, it's a dude. I think.
Okay.
Jason something? Cook? I don't know. I'm making up names.
Nah, you could be.
Who knows?
Yeah, okay.
Shout out to the Gospel Coalition. Come through. We'll have a very deep conversation
come
with you.
Gospel Coco.
But yo, man, that's it. Yo, we going to wrap this up. We tried to keep it short and sweet, but I think we still went a little long. Don't matter. Y'all enjoyed
it. I think so.
But yeah, we're going to keep this thing going, hopefully. Please tweet us. Let us know something we missed. Tweet us topics. Tweet us things we got wrong. Tweet us how better, much better this show is without David. Like, we'll take all of that.
Y'all pray for him.
He hit us up on Twitter during the show. He was like, oh, y'all are going to act like I'm not part of the group.
Absolutely.
Word.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Y'all pray for Hillary Clinton that, you know, I believe she became a zombie, bro. I believe that moment when she stumbled, that's what she turned.
That's what she turned.
That was the turn.
Jesus. Has she joined Trump in zombie? Like, now we just have two Manchurian candidates.
Exactly.
Yo,
it is over, bro.
Yo, it's going to be so interesting. But, yo, please hit us up. We're going to skip the scratch of the week tonight, today. That works?
That's good.
Yeah. We're going to skip the scratch of the week. But yeah, we're going to get back on this. We enjoy being here.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to come back. On behalf of the crew, we out.
Peace. Yeah.
Lights low and the curtains open, and I'm the maestro for this certain moment. Trying to take it sky high, so go alert the stoners. Fear got your guy almost on the verge of blowing it. Bravos, I hear the hand claps, and I know that this here could be my last chance. And I can't ever remember having this chance last. And in this second, this moment here will be past tense. Man, I'm past tense. I'm on the edge of a classic, but slacking got me on the edge of a has-been. Too passive, gotta snatch this moment before I pass it and face this test like Steve Nash and pass it. I will not be crippled. Cast loaves in the oceans, gotta see ripples. Excuses are useless, tools that the fools pick. Only got one shot, but it feels like a full clip. For this one moment, patiently waiting in line just to get on it. These players hating on me, I gotta let it go. Put me in the game, coach, I got some better goals. This game so foul, it's sort of pitiful. Tell your people go and grab a stone and get a free throw. And let them know, I love the Lord. But sometimes it's like that, I love me more. Seek his applause, break all your laws. We tear the roof off, homie, we don't need no doors. So now, I stand on top of this. Fear. I have strength in my esophagus. Hear me roar like a young lion. A team called Iron, a product from new science. My confession ain't no fear in me now. Just like an usher, it's my job to move crowds. Once upon a time, I lived in a world that was bound by fear. Escaped his hold, now life's reset. Then I was given grace to break the enemy's net. It's time for the conquerors. Oh, it's my turn? Excuse me, the monster's up. Foe slaying, cruising in this monster truck. It's no playing, giving bruises in this Tonka truck. My circle's where the riders is. A couple Paul and Silas is, and Leonidas is. Kinda sickening how bold this virus is. No sniffling, but so cold like sinuses.
Make room for the misses, the crew full of misfits. Peruse your policies and hack through ISIS. Intrude your embassy, sneak food to your listeners. Pilots, provisioners, and suicide bombers. Musical monsters, martyrs, quick to die for a Zion. Yeah, this is our moment. We're facing our fear, cause faith has appeared. So baby, we'll take it from here.